Good morning, everyone. I think we'd like to begin. President Stevens, I think, must be held up at her last meeting. I know she intends to be here. So in the interest of moving our business along, I think we should go ahead and start. And as soon as she arrives, I will happily step aside and let her preside. Please take your seats. The chair now calls this ALA Council, Executive Board, and Membership Information Session to order. This meeting is held in accordance with Policy 5.5.2, which calls for at least one session of the ALA Council to be held with the Executive Board prior to the regular meetings of Council. Any member of the Association may participate in the information session. This is an information session only. No action may be taken here. It is ALA's policy to employ a professional parliamentarian for all of its business meetings at the annual conferences. It is my pleasure to introduce Ellie Mina, ALA parliamentarian. I guess I didn't introduce myself when I came up here, so I'm Molly Raphael, ALA president-elect. And also on the dais is Joanne Kempf, Director of the Office of ALA Governance. Daniela Alderson and Alicia Bastel are our projectionists, and Lois Ann Gregory Wood, our Council Secretariat. This meeting is being captioned for the hearing impaired. Our captionist for this annual conference is Kathy Cortopassi. Excuse me. If you wish to take advantage of this service, please be seated where you can see the screens. Today's agenda, ALA Council Document 8.4, is available at the Council Document Pickup Station at the rear of this room. At the 1987 midwinter meeting, the ALA Council voted that BARC, the ALA's Budget Analysis and Review Committee, should report to Council at each ALA midwinter meeting and annual conference. I refer you to ALA Council Document 33.1 and call upon Mario Gonzalez, Chair of BARC, to present the report. Mario?
Good morning, Council. Good morning, colleagues. It's my pleasure to give you the BARC report at this annual conference. We are with Document 33.1. I will take you through the fiscal year 2011 budget update, mid-year adjustments, the beginning of the fiscal year 2012 plan, and the budget monitoring and contingency plans that we have for 2012. Total ALA revenues were $27,300,659, which was $481,000 and change less than budget, 1.7%, and $6.4 million less than last year's budget. But recall that the 2010 is a two-division conference year, and that is always an adjustment on the budget. The total ALA expenses were $29,729,000, which is $703,000 and change less than budget, $3.8 million than last year. Our general fund revenues were $14,744,758, $503,000 and change less than budget. However, $106,000 and change more than last year. The general fund expenses were $17,591,730, $513,000 more than budget, and $696,000 and change more than last year. I want to highlight for you the division roundtable, grants and awards, investments, and the value of our long-term investment. The division revenues were less than budget. However, the expenses were also less than budget, which kept us in good standing. Roundtable revenues were less than budget, and again, expenses were also less than budget. I'm happy to report that we received more grants and award than projected in the budget, $438,948. And also happy to report that our interest in dividends, with the stock market doing well recently, or not in the recent, of 248,302 more than budget. Our long-term investment was at a point of 33,750,178 at the end of April 30th, 2011. At the end of May, it was 33,472, so there was a slight decrease from April to May. We had to do some mid-year budget adjustments in revenue, and they created a variance. We updated the general fund revenues projected based on the April results. And we are expected to reach 26,379,688, which is 442,525 less than the budget as compared to a projected shortfall of 276 that was made last spring. Dues revenues are projected to be less than budget by about $85,000. Subscriptions are projected to be less than budget due primarily to Booklist Magazine, Booklist Online, American Libraries, and a slight improvement in the spring shortfall of 333. That's not on your slide, but I'm giving you the background information on how we arrived at those numbers. As I mentioned before, grants and award exceeded projections by roughly $500,000. In terms of expenses, we made adjustments there as well. The general fund had a variance of 288,045. Divisions had a variance of 874,000. And there was an adjustment also for grants and awards. What I'd like to talk to you about are the revenue shortfalls, where we are, and how we have worked very hard, the staff has worked very hard to balance the budget and create and bring forward the funds that are needed to adjust the shortfall. The general fund will have a shortfall, this is all funds and divisions, of 442,000. And an expense overage of 449,000 for a total of $891,000. The plan to cover the shortfall would be in personnel-related savings, which would be to reduce staff development, delay hiring, and reduce recruitment to give us $128,000 to cover the shortfall. We will have savings in building and technology-related expenses with lower maintenance, lower insurance and utilities, and lower capital expense, therefore depreciation. The executive board, executive committees, and council committees have saved monies to the amount of $38,000. Publishing and conference-related, we reduced the annual conference expenses, we lowered inventory and publishing, and lowered royalty expenses, creating a savings here of $170,000. BCBS is the Blue Cross Blue Shield refund that we get annually. We will have $220,000 we will apply to the shortfall. And we don't always use all the money that we receive, so $50,000 from previous year's refunds and the amount of $50,000 will be applied to this. This will give us $737,000, still leaving us $154,000 short to meet at $891,000 shortfall. BARC made a motion to FNA and to the executive board that there would be an adjustment from the general fund reserve to be capped at $375,000 to meet the shortfall. Just to clarify, we needed $154,000, but these are still projections. Our fiscal year doesn't end until August, so the money can change between $154 and $375. We want the board to be aware of what may be coming. We began the process for our fiscal year 2012 plan, and we looked very closely to see how we can align the ALA priorities with our ALA 2015 strategic plan. We looked at environmental assumptions, positive negative trends, major multi-year unit goals, product enhancements, new business development and strategies, take a look at our current year and where we are, and we met with all of the divisions, all of the units, ALA, roundtables, to take a look at the budget for next fiscal year. ALA Treasurer Jim Neal will be reporting to you on this on Tuesday. As we move along, we will have a detailed month-to-month budget review of the expenses of ALA. We will take a look at the fall meeting, the final FY11 year results, once our budget closes, and we anticipate that to have sometime in the middle of October. In February, we will have the FY12 six-year month analysis, and we will take a look at the revenue trends, always being aware that we are trying to bolster new revenue sources and monitor our expenses. We will have to make expense reductions and strategies and adjustments if needed. As we met at this conference, BARC received and accepted five reports which you are receiving at this conference. We received the Young Professionals Task Force final report. We received the SAPTA Relations Task Force report, Future Perfect Presidential Task Force report, the report of the ALA Effectiveness Task Force, and the Presidential Task Force on Equitable Access to Electronic Content, EQUAC. All of these reports came very close to conference. We are awaiting Council's decisions and deliberations and your determinations of the reports. Some of these reports have considerable budget implications. Others are minimal. So we will await your direction. Finally, I want to thank the committee for the hard work that they do throughout the year to review and monitor the budget of ALA on behalf of Council and the membership. I specifically want to thank the finance staff, Greg Galloway, Elaine Klemek, Keith Brown in particular, Sandy Lee, and I also really want to thank Keith Michael Fields and Mary Gickes for being along with us throughout the whole process. Thank you very much. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Mario. Are there any questions for Mario? Hearing no further questions, at the 1985 midwinter meeting, Council voted that the endowment trustees be invited to report to the Council at each midwinter meeting and annual conference. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 16.1 and call upon Daniel Bradbury, Chair of the Endowment Trustees, to present the report. Dan.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm going to present a brief overview of Document 16.1, which is the complete report from the Endowment Trustees. Before I get to that, however, I would like to acknowledge my endowment trustee colleagues, John Vitale, Deputy Director for Business Administration at Brooklyn Public Library, Bob Walton, CEO of Claremont University's Consortium, and our Treasurer, Jim Neal. Reporting on the endowment is always reporting on a snapshot. Sometimes the picture looks good, other times not so much. Since the snapshot I'm reporting on was taken May 31, I have good news to report. But before I get there, let's take a look at Exhibit 1 and see issues affecting the market. Oil prices rising, now falling a bit. Key economic indicators have been faltering since late April, but the Fed remains hopeful. Unemployment rising to 9.1%. Retailers reporting weak May sales results. The disruptive impact of the Japanese disaster working its way through the system. The stalemate over Greek debt and U.S. rating agencies threatening to downgrade U.S. debt. Amid these reports and occurrences, the trustees are happy to report on our picture day, which is Exhibit 4, May 31, 2011, the ALA endowment had grown to $33,472,000. That's a gain of approximately $1.8 million, or 5.7%, for the year to date as of 5/31. Unfortunately, we've had some slippage in June, giving back at least some of the gains for the year, but let's focus on the snapshot a bit. Exhibit 6 reports the specific experience of our portfolio managers, and all have positive results to report. Three are at or near their benchmarks, four are above their benchmarks, four are below, but all 12 are in positive territory as of 5/31. Invesco shows the greatest gain at 13.9%. NFJ, our small cap value manager, shows the healthiest gain compared to its benchmark, 10.2 to 6.4%. Exhibit 5 shows how our $33.5 million was allocated among our managers as of 5/31 by asset class and by style. Exhibit 7 shows our overall asset allocation strategy, along with the minimum, maximum, target, and actual allocations to the funds. Using asset allocation is the foundation of excess investment earnings. Essentially, the trustees are continuing their strategy of maintaining the current balance between equities and fixed income, and reviewing other asset classes that will reduce risk and enhance performance. Exhibit 8 outlines recent tactical moves the trustees have made in late 2010 and early 2011 in rebalancing the portfolio. We reduced U.S. fixed income holdings by 4%. By trimming PIMCO from 15% to 11%, and we increased U.S. equity holdings by 4% by adding $600,000 to Alliance, the large cap core manager, and $600,000 to the IDP large cap growth manager. Of course, the future is always much easier to predict in retrospect, but since we don't have that perspective, we do believe our current asset allocation positions the portfolio to take advantage of the current financial environment, protect the corpus, and continue to add value. Adding value means generating additional dollars for our association. As noted in my midwinter report in San Diego, the trustees have been examining ways to increase the amount of funds that could be made available for scholarships, awards, program initiatives, and other projects. It was determined that a spending or payout range of 3 to 5% would provide the desired additional funds while minimizing the overall impact on the returns of the portfolio. The recommended changes are as follows. Establish a payout range of 3 to 5%. That rate will be applied to the 5-year, 20 calendar quarters average asset balance and the initial rate that we are recommending is 4%. With this change in the payout, more dollars will be available for scholarships, awards, and operations, and budget planning will be improved. This entire recommendation is explained in considerable detail in Exhibit 13. Adding value means generating additional dollars to the work of the association. I'm sorry, I lost my place. The second action that the board has, or that the endowment trustees have taken, has been to deal with the number of trustees. Council approved increasing the number of trustees to a maximum of 7. The trustees are recommending the addition of one additional trustee position in the upcoming renewal cycle, which concludes at the end of the annual conference in Anaheim. This will increase the number of trustees from 4 to 5 when that is approved. In closing, I want to thank you for your attention, and I want to thank the ALA finance staff, especially Greg Calloway, Elaine Klimek, and Keith Brown for their tremendous assistance in helping the trustees fulfill our official oversight responsibilities. Thank you, and I'd be happy to receive any questions.
Are there any questions for Dan? Seeing no one at the... No, just passing by there, Pat, I see. Okay. Seeing no one at the microphone, we will proceed with my president's report. Oh, just give a hand to Dan. Thank you, Dan. First of all, I want to thank you for putting faith in me to be your president. It has been a tremendous year. I pledged when I took on this responsibility that I would do it full time. It turned out, in fact, to be a 14-hour-a-day job. So I have been pleased to be president of the American Library Association, and I will be pleased to return to a life with an 8 to 10-hour-a-day job. I want to talk for just a moment about what has been occurring in the past year, and in fact several years prior to that. We really have been seeing a significant paradigm shift. And this is a paradigm shift not only for us, for librarians, library staff, for libraries, but also for publishers. And it has been set within the context of significant changes that are in fact occurring globally. They are occurring in economies, and they are occurring in the political structures, as we have seen in the Middle East. I've had the opportunity to travel throughout the country, and most of the libraries throughout the nation are either experiencing static or stagnant funding levels or decreases. There are very few that have increased funding. I've been talking internationally and locally at state levels about 21st centuries and what that means for our society and our educational institutions and for our libraries. There is a difference between the 20th century and this new century that we are in. It does, however, hold great potential for libraries. We are, in fact, the petri dishes for innovation and creativity, and we play a promising role in this new century that demands people to be flexible and creative and innovative and critical and analytical thinkers. I've been talking about libraries in the 21st century. I've been talking about advocacy, which is obviously key, and I've been talking about fundraising. A source of income for all of us who need to get beyond the appropriated sources or whatever funding sources we now have. You will hear task force reports during the upcoming council sessions, and so I will speak no further about them. However, I would like to express my very deep appreciation for the many individuals who were a part of making the presidential initiatives come to successful conclusions. Our authors are advocates, targeted 12 very, very popular and widely known authors, and you have their names in my report. They have taped video PSAs any library can download to their website. In addition, we have four more authors who have done audio PSAs that you can use. But what I want to reinforce is that for years we have had authors coming to our midwinter meetings and annual conferences, and we need to take advantage of those opportunities, and we will, to get messages from those authors that we can use at this very important time to advocate for libraries. We did a Cultivating Your Local Notables online toolkit, and that again allows you to have resources and all libraries to have resources at their level to develop local celebrities or well-known individuals into advocates for their libraries. We updated the library quotes database in collaboration with ALTAP. Again, these are all efforts to enhance our library advocacy effort. And there's an Our Authors, Our Advocates poster, which you may wish to consider purchasing. That's in the ALA store on the conference exhibits floor. I thank Marcy, I thank Macy, I thank Mark Gold, I thank Joanne, I thank Pat Tumulty, and I thank our incoming president-elect, Maureen Sullivan, and Peggy Barber, who's well known to the association, for their work on this initiative, which is intended to continue and have a legacy. The Frontline Fundraising Toolkit, there was a terrific team that worked with Peter Pearson. That toolkit is up online now for any library, anywhere, small and rural, medium-sized. It has techniques to help enhance your library funding, and it's available in PDF, HTML, and in a cute flipbook version, so you can just turn the pages of the book online. What's most important is it's there to help you to develop additional funding sources. If you attended the opening general session, you had the opportunity to see some examples from the Why I Need My Library online YouTube video contest. We had two categories, 13 to 15 and 16 to 18. We had nearly 160 entries, nearly 600 young people who put together very creative videos about supporting their libraries. This was an experiment for us, and we were delighted with the outcomes. I did a lot of interviews this year, and the question that I got the most was, why do we need libraries today in the age of the internet with everything online? That's a question all of us need to be prepared to answer, and we need to be prepared to answer it articulately, filled with value information about libraries, and we need to be not in the least bit intimidated by that question or what may be thought about us. We've got to come out strong because we have great messages and great stories to convey. It's not just about the facts and figures, it's about the stories. I want to thank Diane Chen, I want to thank Paula Bream Heger for their hard work on Why I Need My Library, Megan Humphrey, again Marcy Marola, I want to thank Kim Olson Clark for Frontline Fundraising, and I want to thank the entire ALA team, but most especially the people with whom I've worked in the Office of Governance, with Mary Geekus, and with Keith Michael Fields, who is an extraordinary executive director. And again, I thank all of you. And we are now ready. Oh, I'll take questions, first of all, if you have questions.
Maggie Farrell is here, a counselor. Roberta, we might want to talk about this in Council 1. But I am asking you in a different capacity today, and that is in my former role as the co-chair of the Traditional Cultural Expressions Task Force. So the task force members have asked about an update, and we provided an update for the International Relations Committee. I want to thank both you and Keith for providing that update. One of the questions is the recommendations, and I know that you're working with CALM, and if you don't mind talking a little bit about CALM's role and then also what organization or what unit within ALA that can speak to the issues of TCEs on behalf of ALA. So thanks, Roberta.
Is this an appropriate time for me to respond, or should we do it in Council 1? I'm happy to respond now. Maggie, the reason I was late for this meeting is I was giving the report, the division president's breakfast, so my apologies for being late, but it was precisely because of this issue. I want to help us to go back just a little bit in time, because you may remember at the ALA midwinter meeting in 2010, there had been a resolution discussed in the council forum related to the traditional cultural expressions. And what occurred at that time, it was a set of principles that had been developed. What occurred in the council forum caused the chair of the legislation, Committee on Legislation, to pause and think and believe that he believed that it wasn't ready for delivery to the council, and asked that it be withdrawn. He withdrew it, and a presidential task force was then set up, which looked at the traditional cultural expressions. They worked very hard. They were ably led by Maggie Farrell and by Vivian Pisano, and they prepared and delivered their report at the 2011 midwinter. No, this was a, was an annual conference where it came up? Now I'm trying to remember the original. Yeah. No, it came up again then at for discussion at the 2011 midwinter meeting. Yeah, I'm trying to remember when the first one occurred, and that I don't remember. I thought it was, it was midwinter. Yeah, 2010 midwinter. It came back to 2011 midwinter, where they gave their report. I will be candid with you that they provided the report. They didn't have 100% support of their task force members for everything that was included in the report, but the report was accepted. And subsequent to that, Keith and Molly, I was traveling, had a conference call with the Society of American Archivists, and they will be working our committee on Joint Committee on Libraries, Archives, and Museums, which is CALM, will be working with closely with the Society of American Archivists to continue the discussion on this issue. And it will be broadened to ensure that we have the necessary diversity, which is key to the traditional cultural expressions issue. So we will be involving the affiliates and our Office for Diversity so that they can pull in people who will ensure we have that representation. This work will remain under the aegis of the Office for Information Technology Policy. So that is where we stand now. The broader context is that there is a World Intellectual Property Organization treaty that deals with traditional cultural expressions, and at this juncture, it has only been approved. Last I heard, there's one country. It may have increased to two. There may be several at this point, but it has not received worldwide acceptance. Are there any other questions? Seeing no one at the microphone, we will proceed with the report from our president-elect, Molly Raphael.
Good morning, and again, and thank you very much, President Stevens, for the opportunity to give a brief report. You should all have access to a copy of my written report. I'm not going to talk in detail about what's in here. I'm happy to answer questions. I will say that I'm very pleased with the two areas that I'm working on for presidential initiatives in the area of advocacy and diversity, and they are described in my written report. I've had wonderful involvement and work by many, many members of the association, as well as the ALA staff, which has been just wonderful in the supporting these different issues. As you know, the committee appointments are something that the ALA president-elect is responsible for, working together with the ALA Committee on Committees, the Council Committee on Committees, which work together for the council committee appointments, and then the ALA committee appointments. I work with the president-elect on those appointments. I reported at midwinter to council that we had wonderful participation and cooperation. That process was finished over the last several months. We have a couple of intern slots that are still available to be filled, and one position on the Resolutions Committee of Council. So if there's any counselor who is looking to help council do its business, I'd be happy to hear from you. I'd love to fill that one position that remains, and just talk to me at some point during the conference. I've had an opportunity to visit many places over the last several months. I'm trying to visit library schools anytime I'm in the area of where there are some library schools. I will say I had a wonderful visit to North Carolina, where there are three library schools very close together, and I visited at each one and met with students and faculty and other interested people in the library community. I've also visited some other ones as well. Occasionally, I've been asked to stand in by President Stevens when she has not been able to do something, but I must say the number of times I've had to do this year, I can understand why it was a 14-hour day for her, because she was doing all those interviews and I wasn't getting a whole lot of them, and that's just fine. I'll have my turn in just a few days to start doing that. So I also want to just say, for those of you out there who may be at some point thinking about running for ALA president, it's a wonderful way to have it set up that you have a year to be what I think is kind of like an understudy in the theater. You always have to be ready to go on stage, but you're rarely asked to. But you at least have an idea of what that means when it's your turn to step up. So again, I'd like to really thank the ALA staff for their tremendous work, and I echo Roberta's comments about our executive director. He's been a tremendous support to me, as well as the governance office and advocacy and diversity offices. So I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions? Microphone number three.
This is not a question. Molly, I saw you on TV this morning, and you were wonderful. Wonderful.
Well, thank you. I have to say, this is one of the, again, Roberta had a commitment, and so I was asked to do this, and the TV got a little bit messed up, and I was supposed to be on right after 8 o'clock, but I didn't get on to 8:25, so I'm listening in my earpiece. It's one of those split-screen things, so the interviewer is back in the studio, and the earpiece says, well, good morning. We're talking this morning with Nancy Everhart, president of the American Association of School Librarians. And she was the next interview. So, you know, I flashed through my mind, should I pretend to be Nancy Everhart? And I thought, not a good idea, because Nancy will probably be next, and they'll ask me a lot of questions about school libraries, and while I can talk generally about them, Nancy can talk about them much better than I can. So I had to quickly shift her to that I was not Nancy, and hope that she asked me the general questions that I expected. So thank you for that feedback. I wasn't sure how it came off, but I'm glad that it worked. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Seeing no one at the microphone, we thank Molly Raphael. I will now call upon Keith Michael Fields for announcements. For his report, Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to Council, to present his report.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm just going to highlight two items from my written report, which is Council Document 23.2. And then I would like to just add a few things that are very late-breaking developments. First of all, for those of you who were at the opening general session, you saw the television spot, which is going to be aired on the Lifetime Television Network for the new Connect with Your Kids at Your Library campaign, which is really designed to reach out. We're working with both Lifetime and with Parent and parent and child, Scholastic Parent and Child magazine, to encourage parents to take their kids to the library because we know that's the best thing that they can do for their kids. There's a family activity guide and a lot of suggestions and ways in which families can undertake projects or exciting activities to actually turn their visit to the library into a more rich and rewarding experience, or perhaps to encourage people to take their kids to the library as a place to spend quality time. I don't know how many of you sat in on or participated in the virtual town hall meeting, but that was an innovative development. On June 1st, we did hold our first virtual town hall meeting. We had about 530 logins, although we do understand that in many libraries, a group of people may have sat around the terminal. We had visitors from as far away as Istanbul and a number from Europe. So it really did illustrate, I think, the possibilities of reaching out to the membership. We generally received a pretty favorable responses on the program, which included brief reports from Roberta, Molly, myself, and Clara Bohr, who was standing in for Mario, and also from the Equitable Access and eBook task forces. People submitted questions via Connect, and then we used a polling feature on the virtual town hall software to then query participants on the spot as to which questions they wanted us to go to first. And I think that that element of interactivity made it a much more interesting session. We're interested in any suggestions on how we can improve this. I certainly think that based on the success, this is something that will become a regular feature of the ALA landscape. For those of you, anyone who's been to the ALA website within the last couple of days will be surprised, as I was, to see the new Transforming Libraries web portal is up. It's on the top bar, which is how I ran across it. I do urge you that the next time you have a chance and you're on the page to click on it. This is one of the first developments in terms of this whole new thrust that we've been asked to undertake by the membership as part of our strategic planning process. To really look at how ALA can be a more active force in helping libraries to innovate, in helping them to adopt some of the practices, innovative practices out there. A lot of focus on technology, but also a focus on new ways of engaging communities, new ways of dealing with resource limitations, and being creative. We've brought together a lot of resources, including blogs, wikis, Twitter feeds. We've provided access to links to various resources, and we're working very closely with the divisions, and we'll be working with the roundtables and other groups to really link to the enormous number of resources spread throughout the ALA website at this point that really provide, I think, some great inspiration for libraries seeking to innovate. We're also retooling the way in which we use our award programs. Most ALA awards actually reward innovation and best practice, the John Cotton-Dana Awards being an example. And what we really need to do is, let's not focus on the plaque. Let's focus on, here's the innovative thing that occurred that lies behind the award to really push that content out forward. So I do invite you to visit that. We're very much interested in your comments, your contributions. This is the beginning of a process. The other thing I'd like to say is that we just this week released a privatization checklist, which was developed jointly by the Office for Library Advocacy and the Public Library Association. That is a checklist of considerations for communities that are either facing the possibility of or dealing with discussions regarding the privatization of the library. This has been a very, very hot issue this spring, and we really really want to urge you to take a look at that resource, because I think it's very, very valuable, and we will continue to work in that area, because ALA's policy, as adopted by Council, is that public libraries should remain public, but we need to be prepared to deal with a whole wave of people ready to save money and convinced that they can do so by privatizing their library. So this is a significant threat to libraries that we're dealing with. At the opening general session, Jill Nishi also announced the $300,000 grant to the Spectrum Presidential Initiative, and $100,000 of that is a matching grant. We are rapidly moving toward our goal. Our goal now is to blow the goal out of the water. I would also like to thank councilors. Council donations are now up to 50%, and I would like to particularly thank those of you that have given. And although this is not my role as staff, to urge those of you that have not given to make a donation in any amount. If we could say that 100% of councilors had given to Spectrum, that would be such a powerful thing as we approach corporate sponsors and others. Last but not least, since we're speaking of donations, we are collecting money for four causes at annual, and those are library reconstruction in Haiti. We continue to collect, and we have some opportunities to assist libraries in Japan. At the same time, we're also taking collections for librarians in Joplin, Missouri, and in Alabama, who have been themselves affected by the tornadoes, who've lost their homes and lost their possessions, so that we do urge you to make others aware of the fact that we are accepting donations. Donations received at conference will be equally divided among the four causes, and in the case of the Missouri and the Alabama donations, will go directly to those chapters so that they can distribute them directly to the libraries that are affected. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. Are there any questions for Keith? Microphone number four.
Sue Cam, Councillor at Large. Keith, I haven't had a chance to see the information about privatization, but does that information include educating libraries in how to prove that we are more efficient than private company? In other words, to do a systems analysis to see exactly what we go up against.
Right. It does reference that, but in fact, that's one of the things that we need to, as I talked about, further development. I know that frequently we met with municipal officials when I was, back in the real world, and that library was frequently commended as being the most effectively run department in government. So that is the next area we'll be working on. It's referenced as one of the things that the library can do and needs to do when presented with a privatization threat, but there is further work to be done.
Keith, I wanted to ask if we might be able to get copies of the privatization document and have them available for the tomorrow's council session.
Can do.
Microphone number three.
Marilyn Hinshaw, Councillor at Large, and I apologize for not putting that in when I was congratulating Molly, but I was so excited for having seen you and having seen you do so well. In your director's report, and I have to admit that those of us who have been around for a long time even do not always know all of ALA's acronyms. Would you please tell us this open position and which one it is? The ORS Director.
Office for Research and Statistics.
Okay. Thank Great. You very much.
Obviously, we are looking for a new director since Denise Davis left. We have conducted a round of interviews. We had a candidate we were interested in. We were unable to there were some personal issues that were involved that we couldn't overcome. And we have, at this point, we'll probably be reopening the search. We've got a lot of projects at this point ready to roll. So we're hoping to do that as quickly as possible.
Microphone number seven.
Yes, Camilla Alire, and I am executive board member,
Keith, I just wanted to add to the group that collaborated with PLA and the Office of Advocacy on the privatization checklist. We need to add ALTAF.
Thank you.
Because they did work on it.
That was my oversight.
That's
Thank you, Camilla.
Are there any further questions for Keith? Seeing no one at the microphone, I will now call upon Keith for announcements.
Great. At this point, my job is to provide the most recent data on registration. Currently, registration stands at 14,601 registrants, which includes 11,273 advance and 3,388 on-site registrants and 5,165 vendors for a grand total of 19,826 attendees. Great. How does that compare? Yeah, that is a really... let me say that's a little bit above our projections, certainly much higher than the last time we were in New Orleans. And actually, we came into conference with registrations just, you know, about 10% under our pre-registrations for Washington, which I think is a great accomplishment. The on-site has been about half of Washington, and that's obviously related to the fact that there are not as many libraries in close proximity to New Orleans as there are in Washington, and the number of vendors is about the same. So the total last year was 25 in D.C. Thank you.
All right, in that case, thank you, Keith. And we have now reached the 10 o'clock mark, and the ALA Council Executive Board membership session now stands adjourned, and we are going to reconvene immediately for the ALA APA meeting.